He is Robin Leach. He is Jay DeMarkin. This is Car Keys.
On that note, Robin has a...
We have a sort of a list of things we're going to talk about today. One is a list of reasons that cause crashes and troubles on the highways and deaths around us. Jay has dug up some relevant information and articles, and we've taken notes. We're also going to talk about Dubai, who has successfully tested a autonomous flying drone, two-passenger. And we're going to talk about... convertible cars that you can find around Connecticut within, let's say, 50-mile radius of the broadcast studio here. And we're going to start out with, are keys and key fobs going to become obsolete? And that was broached by BMW, who some engineer or something got on the way on the airwaves or internet waves and suggested that maybe
we were going to no longer need key fobs or
keys for cars, because with iPhones, everybody having an iPhone, you could just put the key code of your car that you buy into the iPhone, and it would be forever your key to start and stop the car. And here I go, because the first thing is, I say it isn't going to happen. And Jay?
Monday morning rant, yes?
Why wouldn't it happen? Is Jay's take on it. I had to answer for him because he didn't pick up on my question. And the issue really becomes one of electricity and what happens when batteries go dead. One in key fobs, but more importantly, one in the vehicle itself, because the battery in the vehicle is the one that powers the electric door locks. And if you have a dead battery on either end, the door locks won't work. But if you have it in the car, even your iPhone won't open it up, because the battery will be dead and the key, the locks will not operate because there will be no power from the car battery. And that happened to me yesterday, in fact, and I had to...
Not for the first time.
And that's what I was going to ask you, because, you know, I understand that people have OnStar, Encore, on whatever...
That's correct, and you can do that through your phone, too, and it'll unlock your car wherever it is. If something's happened, you lock the keys in your car, for example. But if the battery in the car is dead, nothing will open it up. So you need some mechanical way to get into a vehicle, A, to get into the driver's passenger seat, and B, since batteries are now in the trunk, and unless there are battery posts, plus and minus, under the hood of every car that does not have the battery up front, you will have to go to where you can hook up a jump-starting cable or a jump-starter battery.
I would think far, far more helpful would be to jump a car from remotely. That I think, if people wanted to spend their time with their iPhones, that would be a good I'd buy that.
Well, you have what do they call it, charging? Wireless charging now, charging ports. You just put your phone on a pad in the car, and it'll charge.
The battery?
Of the phone, yes.
I'm not even care about the battery of the phone.
No, but you're talking about wireless charging. And in a way, if you had a pad...
Wirelessly.
Why not? What I'm saying is that's how... Spend your time being able to charge the car battery wirelessly. Not Robin. But if you're gonna,
or turn the radio off when you leave the car.
Let's not prolong this. We got other things to talk about. The whole point about it is whether the key fobs can disappear or not. Not easily in my book, if ever. And that's that for that. Next, we will go to Dubai. And why don't you take over that situation?
Dubai,
Dubai or hello, Dubai?
We talked about it briefly off the show, I think, a couple of weeks ago, about... no driver, no pilot drones, taxi drones. And I just saw an article in a video, and I think Robin saw it too, about what they call a velicopter, which is a taxi service that will start operating in Dubai in, I think, early 2021. They're doing the testing now. So it basically looks like a two-person helicopter, but instead of having one rotor, it has
18
small rotors like a drone. It is a drone.
Pilotless.
Pilotless. And you just have an app on your phone, and you...
Go to the nearest Veliport. And set the address you want to go in. And I guess you fly from Volaport to Volaport,
yeah,
but not address to address. So you can't land in your lawn, for example.
Correct. Not yet.
Okay. Not yet.
They don't have lawns in Dubai. Well, actually, they do, but...
But in the United States, it'd be very hard because you have trees in the United States, and you can't. I can't see an 18-rotor drone autonomously flying down into my office address in Lakeville, for example, because there may not be enough airspace between the trees for the rotor department,
well,
radius rotor.
We'll probably
thing
start from skyscraper to skyscraper.
Well, like helicopter pads.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we're back to whether we're going to trust...
The fun thing I thought
human
was about
pilot
the,
or a drone.
Well, yeah. And bringing not the drone part, but the human pilot. A young lady, I would say, I mean, just a new driver yesterday, was essentially tailgating me for most of her travel, simply because she was unaware that it might not be the smartest to not be up somebody's
rear end.
And I am more interested in that as human error, you know, because she just had, there was absolutely no margin for consequence, none, zero, zip.
We can bring that up in the 7 main reasons or 15 main reasons for crashes and fatalities in a minute. I just want to finish the Dubai drone situation because the amusing thing about the article was, of course, are they fail-safe, first of all, and probably not, but just to be sure, they have 3 levels of protection or accessories to help make the passengers comfortable. They have extra batteries. They have extra rotors. I don't know how you do that when it's flying. But they have parachutes.
Well, that's good.
And that is something. And the question is, are the passengers going to have to enter and put the parachutes on? So if they had to evacuate,
eject. I think you misread that. The drone itself has a parachute.
Oh, I didn't.
Sort of like drag racing. That was always the coolest part.
So you push a button, emergency button, and the drone stops, and maybe the parachutes gently drop.
And some small airplanes have that already.
I missed that. Did they show that in the video?
I don't recall.
Okay. Now we can go to...
It brings us to autonomous driving. It brings us to non-autonomous drivers, causes of accidents, and tailgating is probably one that is correlated to 25 or 30% of accidents, which are rear-end collisions. And rear-end collisions happen more easily if you are tailgating.
And that can happen because of aggressive driving habits, distracted driving, so that you're not seeing the spatial distance between you and the car in front of you. Let's say you are texting on your phone, you are adjusting the radio controls, you are doing anything that takes your eyes off looking straight ahead.
She was young.
I understand that.
And what's interesting to me is that it wasn't that she was distracted at all. It was clearly an older car, and she... But what struck me is I thought, with that sort of what I'm going to call encroachment, I thought that she was going to pass me. There's an area where you can pass. Absolutely not. This is simply how she is either being no one has said to her, yo, baby.
Well, there are a lot of aggressive driver habits out there, and they range from your experience. Jay had an experience the other day, which he may wish to pass on or not.
He does not.
I have the experience when I try to get out of the driveway of my office, for example, and I am in the middle of 2 ends of the roadway where traffic starts appearing and coming towards my driveway. And you have to figure out whether you're going to just sit there idly and wait for all the traffic to go away, which could take 10 minutes at times, or whether you want to pick a spatial situation where you see that if you accelerate aggressively out of the driveway, you can get going in the lane ahead of the car that's coming at you from whatever direction you're going. And it's amazing how many times I pick a space to start getting out of my driveway, and the driver that is at the car coming at me decides to speed up as he watches me accelerate out of my driveway and then goes up my tail end because he's angry that I'm now slowing him down or her down going through the town at whatever speed they were going. But they were going at a speed which was perfectly safe to get out of the driveway, but they decide that I'm going to impede them, and they speed up as if they're angry that I pulled out in front of them.
And let's just say, for context's sake, this is in the middle of a relatively small town that you shouldn't necessarily be bombing through anyway.
Well, we know that. But that doesn't
Listeners
stop.
Don't that necessarily.
Stop. Yeah, well, they do know that. But they don't. The whole issue of letting somebody get onto the roadway as opposed to trying to block progress is the issue here. And it's just what goes through people's minds.
Let me ask Jill. So do you think this young lady who was following you the other day, there was no aggressiveness whatsoever? She was just oblivious.
She just wasn't aware. My view, and I'm mean, and my view was that she's like, nobody said, sweetheart, you just are not, the consequences of following somebody that closely are bad.
So how is that driver going to get better with experience? Because one of the causes, and I'm going back to the causes of accidents, and there are several lists of causes, and they all kind of overlap, and teen driving is one of the causes, and to me that makes no sense. Teen driving is not a cause. Teen drivers may be involved in more accidents than older drivers, but it's
or more experience.
It's a lack of more experience. But so my point is, if you're a bad driver as a teen, what is going to experience alone does not make you a better driver. And I think what happens because there is no continuing education, ongoing education with drivers. Once you get a license, drivers get older and get
worse. The habits become more ingrained. But even at the beginning, fine, stipulating that.
Okay.
Let's go to just proper education. You got to give people basic training. I don't care whether it's going to be autonomous or not. People have got to have some basic understanding.
Well, the driver's education booklet, when I took a driver's course, used to tell you that for every 10 miles of speed you're going, you need so many feet, but you should leave so many car lengths between you and the car ahead of time. That's basically gone out.
Totally.
Nobody pays any attention to that. I myself am included. State troopers are included. Everybody's included. They just drive at whatever rate they're going to, and if they happen to be within 25 feet of the bumper of the car in front of them and not realizing it, that's what goes on.
But at least it's 25 feet. What we're talking in this particular instance was so beyond anyone saying, that it was simply obvious that they didn't know.
Well, it's pretty hard to look at when you're trying to drive forward to see how close the person behind you really is.
Yeah.
And
so when you can see their face, it's a little worrisome.
So yeah, we go down.
If you're looking at their face, you're also not looking at the road.
Yeah, that's right. You're not looking at the road, so you're also likely to.
Sorry, rearview mirror?
So no, you can't look at the rearview mirror and look at the road at the same time very well.
No, but your eyes are moving.
Your eyes are moving.
You can.
And anyways, let's go to talk about reasons for crashes and fatalities as they came in the article that Jay sent to me, and I made the following. I'm just going to list them right away without discussing them. 1 through 7 on this particular article was speeding, and Jay will comment on those. 2, drunk driving. 3, distractions. 4, cell phones in general use in the car. 5, weather-caused accidents. 6, red light accidents. 7, driver fatigue. And within all those categories are various things that can cause the problem. And then there's another article out that Jay found that had 15 things.
Right, but they overlap. People like lists. It's so fine. But 5 of those, the last 5 of those could probably go under the first
distraction 4. Is obviously.
Yeah.
They're overlapping for sure, okay? Certainly cell phones is part of distractions. And they go into talking on the phone, texting, editing. Talking to passenger, adjusting controls in the car. That's under distractions. So, there's an average of 35,000 deaths a year caused in auto accidents. I think that's what the average was over the last decade. And
that number fluctuates.
And now we get into what our autonomous computer control car is going to reduce that. There's an article that suggested it might reduce it by 90%. In other words, it would reduce to 3,500 deaths a year instead of 35,000.
That is the big argument for autonomous driving. But my question is a human one. And that is, I'm going to take it away from cars for a second. If either one of you have animals or if either one of you have, if you have people who work on something, like, do you find it important to know what they should do? If you have a dog, if you, for example, have a dog.
In the car?
No. Okay. In life. Or if you have a horse, but somebody takes care of it, should you know about it? And I'm asking about autonomy.
Should you know yourself know what to do if the person who takes care of it isn't there?
Should you yourself know what to do?
That is a question which we could talk about for hours on end, and that goes to the heart of who knows anything about their cars when their cars break down. Do you know what to do about it?
No, and I
do at levels. You don't at levels. Jay knows at different levels. We all have different
expertise. And I maintain that before everybody goes flitting off into the land of autonomy, they should have some sort of clue, because otherwise you are so disconnected from the experience that you're just...
Well, let's talk about the Tesla accidents, which were the early accidents by semi-autonomous driving Teslas. And the question, you know, every time there was a Tesla crash, well, it was a learning curve. And as Jay says, who's programming these cars' computers to decide what the car is going to see and then therefore do when they are driving you down the road and you are supposedly able to read a book? Instead of sitting there with your hands ready to go on the wheel, as all the videos show you when they have it on the news programs, you know, they have the drivers in the driver's seat, but the cars are doing everything. And is anybody reading a book? No, they're ready to take over control of the car if something happens.
Yeah, but it's again as humans we don't. We're not very rational when it comes to fear, because we board an airliner with 300 people, and if the pilot, both pilots have simultaneous heart attacks, there is absolutely nothing we can do to bring that airplane down. So if we're riding, and even if you're riding in a school bus, I mean, as a kid, I was also always thinking I would ride in the front of the bus, because if something happened to the driver, I could jump in, and I knew better how to take control of that bus and make sure we didn't crash all 40 kids. And my school bus driver, by the way, was a horrible driver. And I almost, you know, I debated every morning whether I was going to get on the bus or not, because it was just terrible.
And that's sort of interesting. But in your pilot thing, you know, I am always comforted by that half the time passenger in first class, so somebody in a seat knows how to fly a plane.
But then you have to get through a locked door.
Yeah, no, I
And that's another problem.
So the reality is, if we're not in the driver's seat, the chances that we are going to be able to do something are slim. And once in a while, we do hear about, in my last 30, 40 years, I've heard one or two school bus stories where a kid jumps and takes control of the bus. But those cases are few and far between. So we're back to the decisions we make as drivers, and I think as drivers, we have a moral obligation to make sure we're making the best decisions we can make. And yes, education is key, and there's certainly a lot of work to be done there, and we can go on forever on that. I think the other thing is, road rage, fatigue are causes of accidents or contributing factors. And so if we drive when we're tired, I know I drive a lot. If I take the wheel and drive 2 or 3 hours when I'm tired, sleep deprived, it is very hard for me to drive. And I'm not as good at what I do as if I'm fully rested. Likewise, if you leave your house and you're 5 minutes late to go to your appointment, you're going to be an angry driver on the road, and the risks go up increasingly. So if we all go to bed 10 minutes earlier and get up 5 minutes earlier, we'll be better rested and tackle our days a little more calmly. But the roads will be safer.
In an ideal world, everybody would know how to deal with that, and they'd get 8 hours of sleep instead of four, and they would get they'd get off on their trip half an hour earlier than they get off on their trip, and then we wouldn't have this trouble.
But
you get the mindset of everybody in a car is never going to be the same. So we're not going to have the concept of an autonomous driving car and cars that are connected on the highway might be getting us closer to that capability, because all the cars would be going down the road at a simple speed and they'd all be talking to each other and we would all be chatting conversationally with our passengers or our
God
dogs.
God forbid there should be an
but
update
I want to go to
glitch.
Your. I want to go.
Your, but you're, hold on. 35,000 deaths, 90% of them are human errors.
Yeah, correct.
So technology is capable of bringing that number down.
Technology is capable of, I'm not disputing that. Not disputing that. What I am disputing is if you don't have, I'm really sorry, this is a, if you don't have a, you know, some sort of balance between the technology and the human
interaction.
I think that there is a huge margin for
what do you mean by balance? I mean, there needs to be, again, I think the education process is different. The skills required to be in control of an autonomous car are different. And I think even the cars we have now, semi-autonomous cars, take a lot of learning how to use the systems in the car.
Well, let's put it this way. Some of the cars are coming through with a lot of the technology ready to go, if not already activated. And, for example, how many controls in the new Subaru Outbacks with, what do they call it, Sense? They're safe. The lights that beep and the cars come up behind you. What are they? Safety? What's the Subaru system? Driver
eyesight.
Sense or something?
Eyesight.
Right. You've got deactivation capable of controls on the dashboard. You can turn some of them off and other things, but they reset every time you turn ignition off and turn it back on again in most cases.
My new visual cue as to whether a driver is capable or I get worried when I see modern cars and people with handheld phones to their ears. And that tells me they're not capable of programming their Bluetooth in the car. And that signals something to me.
Okay.
That's assuming they have Bluetooth capability. But whether they do or don't.
All new cars do.
Yeah, but.
Well, not standard.
I have a
most
similar.
Of them do.
I have a, absolutely. The other thing is when you see an array of screens, like a solar panel on the
Let's look at the Tesla screen. You have to take your eyes off the road to go and push program the screen on the Tesla. So that screen is not necessarily as user-friendly as they'd like to make it be. I haven't driven a Tesla, so I can't really comment on whether it takes your eyes off the road long enough to cause trouble or not. But I believe the screens on the new Model 30s and the new ones coming out are even more sophisticated, but they've got a lot of things. It's sort of like your computer screen when you start it up. You've got all sorts of icons on the screen. You've got to touch the right one.
I have to admit that even though I am a pro technology in cars, I do have a problem with screens and hitting the screen to get any command in the car. And it becomes very hard to do when the car is in motion.
Yeah, no, I'm not exactly.
And not only when you start having bumps in the road and you try to put your finger on the icon and then you hit the other icon because you just went over a bump.
Yeah.
And grabbing a round dial sure was easy.
It sure was, and it still is. And even there's some retrofitting going on in some of the car manufacturers' vehicles, putting dials back in place for heater fan controls and heater temperature controls with semi-automatic stuff.
Okay, we have 1 minute left, I think.
We do, and we want to talk about
convertibles. I want to talk about convertibles real quick. Last week, I went on a rant with the wagons. I want to talk about convertibles because we're getting into the foliage season. So I did a quick search on Auto Trader, and there are over 50 convertibles for sale in a 50-mile radius under $15,000. There are a lot of minis. You can get an 08, 09 Mini for under $10,000, and you can get a beautiful Jaguar XKE with 20,000 miles for under $15,000.
Did you say that was 2004 or 5?
2004.
Yeah.
XKE.
Beautiful.
It doesn't matter.
Let's keep going.
Beautiful old cars. My point is, this is a time to go and get a convertible and go and enjoy the roads.
And not only are they available under $15,000, but to go to take it one step further, his search said that there were 800 convertibles for sale in the 50-mile radius of our broadcast without worrying about what the price point was. So, yes, if you want a convertible, and some of them may have been new, but most of them may have been used, go shopping on the internet and see if you want to get the convertible of your choice that you've been waiting for years, because they're there and they're in good shape and fun to drive.
He is Robin Leach. He is Jada Markin. This is Car Keys. Baby, you can drive my-